case is United States v. Abdullah. Before we begin, I want to note that Judge Maggs has recused himself from this case. However, we are delighted to have Senior Judge Efron join us in this case. He is a wonderful and esteemed colleague. He needs no introduction in the military justice community, and we welcome him back to the bench. Thank you. Captain Moore, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the appellant?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Captain Moore, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very well, then. Please proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge Olson, members of the court. May it please the court. Appellant requests to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
When a service court issues an en banc opinion of the court, which overturns meaningful relief granted by a properly constituted panel, the public and the service member must be able to look at that decision and immediately recognize it as a product of judges who unquestionably had the authority to speak for the court. Here, on the day the Army Court issued its opinion of the court, one judge was already retired and the other was on terminal leave, having completed all of her operational requirements. Yet, both votes were counted as part of the majority in that decision. Since there is no rule in the military system which permits vote banking, this court should look to the Supreme Court's guidance. That guidance is direct. An appellate decision cannot rest on the vote of judges who are no longer in active service on that court when the decision is rendered.
So, Captain Moore, understandably in your brief, you focus a lot on the Supreme Court case of Uvino. But in that case, the judge actually died. And so the reasoning was the deceased was no longer a judge, and therefore that the vote of that person could no longer be counted. Now, just focusing on Judge Walker, not on General Smalley, Judge Walker was on terminal leave. Isn't there an important distinction between being dead and being on terminal leave?
Your Honor, Uvino stands for timing and status. Yes, in that case, Judge Reinhart was deceased. But the court's point in Uvino was that a judge's votes cannot be fixed, and that a judge's vote can be changed up at any time until the decision is issued. In this case, Judge Walker was on terminal leave. Army Regulation 600.H.10 defines terminal leave as completing all of your operational duties and all of your out-processing.
Now, is that what it says, or doesn't it say complete all operational requirements?
All operational requirements and out-processing requirements, Your Honor.
So isn't there a distinction between to be drawn between operational requirements and operational authority? In other words, her superiors may have determined that they would no longer assign her with responsibilities, but does that necessarily mean she didn't have the authority while she was on terminal leave to still vote, deliberate, change your vote, author an opinion?
No, Your Honor. Her authority ended when she began her terminal leave. The requirements in the joint rules requires assignment to the court along with the active duty requirement.
So is there anything in the JA that would show us that, in fact, she was no longer assigned to the court?
Yes, Your Honor. JA 32, the Army Court's panel composition memorandum, which was issued on 30 September before this decision was rendered, has removed Judge Walker as a judge on their panel compositions. Additionally, Your Honor, the JA 34, the HR memorandum, which lays out both Chief Judge Smalley's timeline as well as Senior Judge Walker's timeline, establishes that both were on terminal leave prior to November 5th, 2024, when the decision was rendered, Your Honor.
Now, along those lines, with J32 that you just referenced, when it comes to this case, wasn't there some indication that it simply said en banc?
It does, Your Honor, but in light of Jovino and the Supreme Court precedent, which stems from American Foreign Steamship, that you still have to be in status and have authority on the court for your vote to count.
Okay, but let's separate that out. My initial question to you was, where do we find in the JA anything that she no longer had operational authority? And you're citing to JA32, but where am I finding that in JA32?
Your Honor, JA32, Chief Judge Walker is no longer assigned as part of a panel for the Army Court. The Army Court has removed her as a panel member, and that tracks because when you read this with JA34, when she began her terminal leave, she begins her terminal leave, they issue their new panel composition, which shows to the public, and this is a public perception issue, Your Honor, that Judge Walker is no longer a member of the Army Court. So when the decisions issued on 5 November 2024, from the public perception lens, and factoring on the Lilly Burr factors of how the public is going to perceive our military justice system, this looks like we have a decision with two judges who are no longer on the Army Court, which are part of the majority, which takes away meaningful relief from an appellant where he already won from another properly composite panel. So to the public perception, this would look like vote stacking. So, Your Honor, when we look at the public-facing documents, we have judges that are on the decision which are no longer assigned to the court. And looking to the government's practice of the government cites to the customs where this footnote has been a custom of the services. It's important to note with that footnote, though, only the Army Court has utilized that footnote post-Jovino. So when you look at the footnote that the government's relying on, and you shepherdize that footnote, every time it's been used post-Jovino, post-2019, has only been used by the Army Court, and it's been used in 8 circumstances in which judges were retired. When you look at that compared to the Supreme Court precedents of a decision is rendered on the date it is decided, this footnote cannot create law. It cannot create a rule. So the Army is trying to essentially get around Jovino and the Supreme Court's rule about when a decision is issued by a footnote of including votes of people who are no longer on the court.
And, counsel, on going back to your issue with regards to the HR memorandum and the terminal leave, is it defense position that consistent with regulation for a uniform military appellate judge, they are only a judge while they're filling the billet. So your argument is once she was cleared or once General Smalley left the court and retired, they were no longer filling a military judge billet. So therefore, they could not operate either for operational requirements, operational authority, operational anything because they are no longer military judges.
That's correct, Your Honor. So under the joint rules, the other requirement is to be and assigned to the court. That's the rule that the judge advocate generals have established through Article 66 is that our judges sitting on CCAs will be assigned to the court and then have that active duty status. In this case, when we're on terminal leave or specifically retired, you're absolutely not assigned to the court anymore. And when we read that requirement with the timing requirement that the Supreme Court has articulated, which most with all federal courts follow, since we don't have a specific rule in the military saying otherwise, this court should adopt that rule that the date that matters is the date of the decision. And in this case, on 5 November 2024, Chief Judge Smalley and Senior Judge Walker were not Army judges anymore.
So when a CCA judge goes on terminal leave, as of the stroke of midnight, they turn into a pumpkin? Or is it a situation where your argument is the court, the CCA, did not continue Judge Walker's operational authority, where it could be going forward if the chief judge of the CCA decided a person could continue to serve on terminal leave until such time as that person retired?
Under the joint rules where services are allowed to define their own service component, Your Honor, in the joint rule 7 Charlie, yes, the services could create the rule that you're talking about. However, the Army Court has not done that. So with the reading that with Army Regulation 600-8-10, ceasing that operational requirement would, for all intents and purposes, end her service in the Army, end her assignment to the Army Court. That's how the public would perceive this this court, Your Honor.
So, counsel, the CCA appointment statutes are kind of a mess, right? And they're a little bit unconstitutional. But we get around that problem by the fact that all officers above a certain rank in the military are already, under constitutional terms, they are officers of the United States. They are appointed by the president with the advice and consent of the Senate. And the way we have staffed the CCAs for the last 30 years is by the president taking these principal officers that they have in the military, in the JAG Corps, and detailing them to the CCAs because the duties of being a CCA judge are germane to their role as a principal officer JAG in the military. So I assume that they get the authority to decide cases when they get detailed or assigned to the court. But what marks the end of that detailing or that assignment to the court when we would say they are no longer, even though, because I assume you'd agree that even someone on terminal leave is still an officer of the United States.
It would still be an officer of the United States, correct.
Right. But I think your argument is that even though they are officers of the United States, they are no longer detailed or assigned to the court and no longer have the authority of a CCA judge.
Precisely, right, yeah.
And what marks the end date of the time when they have been detailed or assigned the duties of a CCA judge?
Well, certainly retirement for Chief Judge Smalley. For terminal leave, appellant's position is that the day that they begin their terminal leave is the day they complete their operational requirements to be a CCA judge, and they are no longer assigned to that court. And then that is supported by the Army Court's internal panel composition memos, which on 30 September removed Senior Judge Walker as a judge on their court.
And you know, I'm a civilian, so you got to explain this to me like I'm 12. So, like, where are they, right? Judge Walker goes on terminal leave. What unit is she associated with? Where is she? She's still a principal officer of the United States. She's still a member of the Land and Naval Forces. Where is she?
They're still in the military for pay purposes. It's a run out period, and each regulation, each service defines your terminal leave relatively the same, a little bit different, that you've completed all of your operational requirements. Many cases they are going on to civilian employment, collecting two paychecks. In most cases you have DD-214 in hand, you have retirement orders in hand, and you are continuing on for all intents and purposes as a civilian. You're not reporting to duty anymore, you're not checking in anymore, you're not showing up to the Army Court and working while on terminal leave. Your operational and out-processing requirements are complete when you go on terminal leave.
But doesn't it seem like, it seems like your argument is, well, once they just stop being given assignments and we know that they're on terminal leave, we can tell that they're not on the court anymore. But it seems a little odd that given the significance and the authority granted to someone when they are detailed to the CCAs, that there's no demarcation when that authority stops, at least not when they go to transfer to terminal leave.
Your opponent's position is that terminal leave is a status. There's requirements to go on terminal leave, and in this case, everything indicates that those requirements have been met. The rest of the armed forces has no problem articulating when someone starts terminal leave that they stop doing their job. It's the next person up. The Army continues on.
Captain Moore, just out of curiosity, would your argument be different if she had simply gone on permanent change of station orders? In other words, what if she didn't go to terminal leave, but she was pending transfer to another command, and she was on 30 days or 60 days, whatever it is, leave pursuant to your permanent change of station? Would your argument be the same? Because it still raises the same question that Judge Hardy is asking. what is her status? Does she still belong to the command she just detached from? Does she belong to the one she's going to? Or is that all dependent on what the orders say?
I think it's dependent on what the orders say and where they're at and when they take that leave. If they take it on the front end before they in-process their new command, I think it's a weaker argument for appellant to say that they're no longer on the court anymore. If they take that leave after they've out-processed the Army Corps and they've in-processed, say they go be the SGA at the 82nd Airborne.
Well, she's on leave and she hasn't checked in as the SGA yet.
If she's out-processed, I think it depends on the paperwork in that situation, Your Honor. If she's out-processed the Army Corps, then she's no longer assigned to the Army Corps as the Joint Rules defines the term.
Mm-hmm. Could I ask you another question about both parties seem to refer us to the Federal Circuit cases in the Supreme Court on these kinds of issues with the due understanding that Article III judges are different, they have like tenure and all of that. But I noticed that it seems when the circuit court issue arises and it becomes a problem, they almost treat it like it's a structural error in all those cases. And I just wondered if you had looked at that, because if it's structural error in your case, that's a slam dunk for you, is it not? Or is U.S. v. Witt kind of the bailiwick that we're in and the bucket we're in as far as precedence is concerned, and we go right to Liljeburg instead?
Your opponent's position is that the panel composition is a structural error. With the fact that this is if this court finds that decisions are rendered in light of Uvino on the date they are decided, and members participated in this court.
No, I understand, but is your focus on Liljeburg because that's kind of where we've been as far as the military justice system, and there are too many differences between the Article III courts and Article I courts that it's a safer argument or a more appropriate argument to rely on how our court and the jurisprudence in the military has developed under Liljeburg.
Under Liljeburg and Witt, Your Honor, the public perception of the optics of this would the same result would be to vacate and remand, whether it be structural.
So you were aware of how the circuit courts treat it, but you've chosen to simply try to persuade us based upon our own precedents in this case. Is that fair to say?
It's two arguments, Your Honor. So the structural, the composition question, just based off of the rules, the joint rules, and having no rule on point in the military system, which will allow judges to continue to participate when they're retired. Following Uvino, this court should adopt that rule that a case is determined when it is decided. Since there's judges that have decided this case who were no longer part of the Army Court, vacate and remand.
Let me have one question, and sir, Chief, I yield after this question.
Please, take your time.
Thank you, sir.
I see my time has expired, Your Honor.
Well, I was getting him to give you some time here.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Huh? All right. Let me ask you this now. We've talked about the two judges at issue here. Do we have to agree with you on the issue of both judges? Or, for instance, if the court decides in your favor with regard to Judge Smalley, do we have to even bother addressing the issue regarding Judge Walker? You know what I'm asking?
I know what you're asking, Your Honor.
Or is it a situation where, look, you need both of them to be disqualified or ruled ineligible for you to prevail?
Appellant does not need both to be deemed disqualified for us to prevail. Chief Judge Smalley alone is enough for vacate and remand on this, since he's retired at the time of the decision. But the rule should be drawn that with judges on terminal leave also, from the public perception thing, moving forward, that judges on terminal leave should also not be participating in decisions if they're no longer assigned to the court.
I want to revisit that issue because you seem to make concessions and then tried to claw them back. Is it a situation where you're taking the position that terminal leave in and of itself is sufficient to remove, divest from an officer the ability to serve as a CCA judge? Or are you saying terminal leave and removal from the panel, removal from the court, removal from that authority is what means that the person can no longer serve as a CCA judge?
Your opponent's position is that terminal leave ceases your assignment to the court.
Chief judge says no more operational requirements, however, keeping you on the panel because you still have operational authority to vote, deliberate, change your vote, author an opinion, until such time as the moment you retire?
If the CCA creates that rule, then that would be permissible. In this case, there is no rule, Your Honor.
Chief Judge.
Article 66 states that the judges who are assigned to the Court of Criminal Appeals may be commissioned officers or civilians. Does that statute preclude the assignment to the court of a retired commissioned officer?
It doesn't, Your Honor. There's ways, and the joint rules also follow that language of Article 66. There's ways to create essentially a senior judge status if the rules allow it. If they do that creation and they put the judge on whatever orders it would be to bring them onto the court as a civilian. On this fact pattern, none of that was done, Your Honor.
And what rule would preclude that from being done, even in this case? Do we know that the assignment was terminated expressly? Is there an order which says you are no longer assigned to the Court of Criminal Appeals?
There is no order in this case, Your Honor.
So at what point was the assignment terminated?
For
I know your argument as a matter of law and principle you're making, but in terms of a documentation, do we have a document in the record that said you're no longer a member of this court?
The closest document in this record would be the HR memorandum, which outlines the timelines of both, and that's JA-34, Your Honor, of Chief Judge Smalley's change of command, leaving the court, beginning his terminal leave, and the same for Judge Walker. But there is no order pulling them off the court.
The order from this court specifically asked, when did the term end? Is there anything in that HR memorandum that said his assignment ended? I understand the argument that you're making that it was ended by various personnel actions. But is there anything in that memorandum from the HR which said, oh, in response to your question as to when the assignment ended, it ended on such and such a date?
It does not use that language, Your
Thank you.
Sir, can I ask one more question? I'm sorry.
No,
go ahead.
I defer.
Johnson,
you go ahead.
I defer.
Thank you. Thank you, brethren of the court. I just want to quickly go back to the question that Judge Sparks was asking that touches on how this court has dealt with, as you label, the structural error versus the Liljeburg, the prejudice issue. And we have dealt with it separately or differently. In U.S. v. Lane in 2006, the court did not test for prejudice in that case, and that was the case involving Senator Graham sitting as an appellate judge. And we just deemed that the fact that he was ineligible to sit, that there was error, and we vacated and remanded. Whereas in U.S. v. Vines, we did consider both. We went through the Liljeburg analysis, so both, you know, error and then prejudice analysis. So do you have a recommendation as to which one of those tests or procedures this court should follow, that once we deem that it's structural error, that's endgame, and vacate, or that we should actually go through the Liljeburg analysis?
Appellant's position would be the structural error approach, Your Honor. If this court disagrees, we feel we still prevail under the public perception arm and of Liljeburg, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Yeah, I hate to keep digging, Chief, but I just need one more question answered here. With regard to Captain Walker, while she was on terminal leave, could her leave authority, the person who sent her on, the authority who sent her on leave, have simply decided while she was on terminal leave to say, hey, Captain, we need you back. We have this other case. I know you're on terminal leave, but we'd like to order you back, at least to participate one more time for old time's sake. Could they have done that? It seems to me that she's still basically attached to the command she's leaving. She's on leave. Somebody's got to put you on leave, right?
Yes, sure. That'd be an administrative process of recalling her.
Well, you wouldn't have to recall. Recall is a different thing, is it not?
Well, they would have to terminate their her terminal leave to bring her back.
Her orders, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess what I'm asking, is it like every other kind of leave? I mean, they can call you up when you're on leave while you're doing a permanent change of station and say, hey, we don't want you to go to San Diego, even though you're now in Tulsa at that point. Redirect yourself and go to Boston. Or come back after you've gotten to Texas. Come back to Washington, and we have work for you here. Aren't those all prerogatives that belong to the authority sending you on leave, whether it be terminal leave or annual leave or permanent change of station leave?
I think the requirements change depending on the type of leave, Your Honor.
I guess that's what I'm
asking.
There
is a possibility to recall someone off of terminal leave and put them back in their prior status.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, on this facts, that's...
Well, the reason why I kind of quibble with you over the word recall, because that would be different. That would be, for instance, in Judge Smalley's case, if he was retired, there's a process for recalling military officers who are in a retired status. Is that true?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. That's the only... And I'll leave it alone.
Any further questions from the bench? Senior Judge Efron.
You referred at various points to the panel composition memos, and each of the memos that are in the joint appendix appear to say this reorganization affects all cases pending except for, both of them mention Abdullah. What's the impact on that in terms of whether any of the judges who participated in the Abdullah case were then removed by this order, which says it doesn't apply to them?
Your Honor, the impacts of that is in line with Uvino and American Foreign Steamship, is that they still need to be members of the Army Court of Criminal Appeals at the date the decision is rendered. So when the case is decided, appellant's position is that they were not on the court anymore. So
I understand that, but part of your argument was that this order removed them from the court. But if they still have a document that says you're assigned to the court and no one has issued a document that says you are no longer assigned to the court, why would this panel composition memo remove them from the court if it expressly excludes the Abdullah case from the operation of that memo?
Your Honor, if there's a different paperwork, if the Army Court had a different rule, which the joint rules would permit, that your fact pattern would sway this case. But since none of that was done in this case, we have to look at it as the judges who are assigned to the CCA at the date of the decision. And no matter what the panel composition says, Chief Judge Smalley was retired. He was off of active duty at the point of this decision, and Senior Judge Walker was on terminal leave.
And where does that rule say that a retired officer cannot be serving on a case?
Well, Your Honor, the rule says that it also requires assignment to the court. So there's nothing saying that these judges were assigned to the court on November 5th, 2024.
does the document have any panel memos that are anywhere near that date? Does the record in this case have any panel memos in there that are anywhere near the November 5th date of the issuance of the opinion?
The closest one would be JA 32, Your Honor, 30 September 2024.
Thank you.
One last one, Chief.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I'm being informed by the fact that I also was an Army officer, and so as Senior Judge Efron is getting at, as you noted, terminal leave, the termination of your assignment to a command is an administrative matter. That document exists somewhere. Both General Smalley and former Judge Walker cleared a unit somewhere, and somewhere in the bowels of a HHC, there is a document that says they cleared on this date. Is it so? The issue seems to be that there is that document that releases them or terminates their detail or assignment to a unit versus whatever the CCA created.
Correct, Your Honor, and that's Appellant's argument, is that why the assignment to the court ends at terminal leave.
Thanks.
Any further questions from the bench? Seeing none, thank you. Captain Moore? Captain Moore?
Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, and may it please the court. My name is Megan Moore, and along with Colonel Richard Guarini, we represent the United States. This court should affirm ACCA's en banc decision because Judge Walker and Judge Smalley acted permissibly in accordance with Rule 7 of the Joint Rules of Appellate Procedure. And secondly, the government proposes a test regarding Rule 7. It is three prongs and is as follows. For the purposes of Rule 7, a retired judge is considered to be in regular active service if that judge was assigned to the CCA in the case before retirement, the judge completed final action before the opinion was issued, and third and finally, the retired judge is available and subject to recall. This satisfies the Supreme Court's concern in Jovino versus Rizzo about judicial availability, and also this court's concern in United States versus Witt about judicial participation.
Now you say subject to recall, but was General Smalley recalled?
No, he wasn't, Your Honor.
So how do your criteria fit General Smalley?
Yes, Your Honor. So subject to recall, although General Smalley was not recalled, under Jovino he was still available. So as Your Honor mentioned to appellant, is this akin to a judge being deceased? The government's position is that it is not. Under Jovino, the true test is whether an opinion becomes mutable or immutable. And here, the opinion was still mutable.
But does that satisfy the Constitution? Right? The Constitution says that for officers of the United States to wield significant authority, which CCA judges do, they've told us that, they have to be detailed or assigned to the court. And it seems like, just more generally speaking, at least the way I understand it, when you retire from the military, you are still a member of the Land and Naval Forces, but you have been divested of your command authority, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And so if you've been divested of your command authority, you don't have any authority to wield on the CCA anymore. You could be recalled to active duty. You can be recalled. You can't be recalled from death in the civilian world, but in the military we can recall retired officers to active duty, and then they resume. They get granted back all of their authority that comes along with their status as an officer. But my understanding, and you can explain to me if I'm wrong, that when they're retired, they don't have that authority. They still have the benefits of being retired. They can shop the PX and go on the base and do lots of things, but they have been divested of their command authority.
Yes, Your Honor. Regarding the en banc and the power to participate, appellant also cited American Foreign SS Corporation, particularly 28 U.S.C. 46 Charlie. So granted, that is Article III judges who take senior status. However, there are similarities to Article I judges. Even though Judge Smalley, yes, he is retired, when the en banc was granted on 14 June 2024, both Judge Smalley and Judge Walker were assigned to the CCA. And an en banc is different than a three-membered panel. Appellant also pointed out the JAs on page 30 and 32 regarding panel corporation, essentially. However, ACCA was prospectively acknowledging that both these judges were retired and did remove them from a three-membered panel. But an en banc is distinct. It requires full court participation. And as this court has said in United States versus Witt, judges cannot strategically manipulate whether they pick and choose or hear a case or not. This is different from Witt because once the en banc was granted on 14 June 2024, it was the expectation that both of these judges participated. Briefly moving to...
Go ahead, Judge. No, go, Chief.
So I'm not sure I understand your argument. If you've got someone who's retired, there's been no steps taken to recall that person, you're saying that a chief judge of a CCA, simply by saying, I want you to continue to sit, can supersede any rules having to do with what constitutes retirement in the armed forces?
No, Your Honor. Under Rule 7, which Judge Hardy mentioned his constitutional concerns about, it does allow for CCAs to have their own discretion in defining regular active service. And to appellant's point, the Army does not have a definition of regular active service. But under the government's...
So how do you get from a full-blown retiree to regular active service? How does anything having to do with the plain understanding of the language of regular active service equate to someone who's a full-blown retiree?
Yes, Your Honor. Judge Smalley was under regular active service on 14 June 2024 when the en banc was granted.
And then, why would that date matter? Why doesn't the date when the opinion was issued, why isn't that the critical date?
An en banc is unique from a three-paneled judge. It does require full court participation, which under Witt, it is these judges' expectation that they participate. And on 14 June, when the en banc was granted, that was Witt's expectation.
But, counsel, I don't recall, no one is challenging whether the en banc was properly constituted on 14 June. So, as Judge Hardy noted, the operative date is not 14 June at Constitution. If we look at Jovino, then the operative date is the date that the decision was released, published. That's when a case is determined, and that was in November.
Yes, Your Honor, on 5 November 2024. Mm-hmm. And under Jovino, it is all about judicial availability. So under the government's proposed test, and granted, it is just a test with a floor and there is a ceiling. But under that third prong, both Judge Walker and Judge Smalley were available in the opinion.
Now, where do you get available from in Jovino as compared to status? Judge Reinhold had lost his status as a judge because he was dead. Didn't General Smalley lose his status as a judge because he was full-blown retiree?
No, Your Honor. Under Ben Ghani, as a retiree, he's still receiving retirement pay. He's still subject to UCMJ jurisdiction.
And well, that's clear, but it's a separate, completely separate issue from whether he was still in the status of a judge as compared to being in the status of someone who can be court-martialed.
Correct, Your Honor. And the Supreme Court did say in Jovino, judges rule for life but not eternity. And Judge Smalley's fact pattern is distinct where he could come back and change his mind. He's not ruling from the grave. And the same is true for Judge
But, counsel, we have to distinguish an Article III judge from Article I judges, which we are, but we have a statutory term, versus the CCA judges who are uniformed, and under the joint rules, the requirement is that they are detailed or assigned by a judge advocate general to their service court. And so I think what we're all struggling with is, as Chief said, how do you get from you are retired to, oh, I can submit changes to my draft opinion, or I can submit, you know, how do we bridge that gap? Because at a minimum, the retiree would have to be recalled to active duty and then be reassigned or detailed to the CCA, because appellate military judges are only that in that status when they are detailed to the court by the judge advocate general. So I think that that's what the chief is trying to get at. How do we bridge that gap?
Yes, Your Honor, and acknowledging Judge Johnson and Judge Olson's concern about status change. However, under Jovino, it is more about the mutability or immutability of an opinion. And to your point, Your Honor, the opinion became immutable on 5 November when it was ultimately filed. And under the government's proposed test, both the CCA judges were assigned to the CCA. They were assigned to the case. They completed final action, as is noted on page 35 of the joint appendix, where it says Judge Walker completed final action before her retirement, and Judge Smalley completed final action before his departure. And then they also remained available and subject to change their mind. So under Rule 7 Bravo, Judge Walker facially meets the definition. She was still assigned to the CCA. She was still receiving active duty pay.
But no, she was not. I mean, if she was on terminal leave, that means she is no longer assigned to the CCA. She has cleared. Well, she probably, you don't get assigned to the CCA. She was assigned to some HHC somewhere. But she would have cleared that unit. She was no longer a military judge.
Your Honor, to both you and Judge Sparks's point regarding the hypothetical to appellant of if Judge Walker had a commander, where would he call her back? Or to Judge Hardy's point of where is she sort of in this terminal leave status? If her commander were to call her back from terminal leave, she would report to ACCA. So under Jovino, she is available and can still make a mutable opinion by changing her mind. And the same is true for Judge Smalley as well.
Yeah, with regard to that statement, I mean, if she is recalled, brought back to, under orders off of terminal leave, wouldn't it depend on what her orders say she's attached to? And I don't know what her orders say, and I'm not sure that's in the record. But doesn't it basically, isn't that determined by what her orders say she's attached to, or what unit or element that she's attached to while on terminal leave?
You are correct, Your Honor, that there's no proffer or affidavit of if she were to be called back, what HHC, to Judge Johnson's point, would she fall under. But the main concern is, does she have the availability to be called back, of which she does.
All right. Now, with regard to Judge Smalley, are you saying that just because there is a recall process, governed by statute, I believe, for recalling a retired officer, just because that exists, that makes him available at the time?
Correct. Yes, Your Honor. And this is different.
So if General Smalley were a field artillery officer and he'd retired, and the brigade commander said, I need General Smalley back, he's available, would we say that's fine?
We would, yes, Your Honor, because he's
so
available.
You wouldn't need to go through any steps of having that person who is a full retiree, no administrative action. It's just a 06 somewhere can pull in a full retiree back into field artillery.
Well, Your Honor, to bring Judge Smalley back, it would require Secretary of the Army approval, and there is no proffer or affidavit that Judge Smalley suddenly was like, I do want to change my mind from when he retired on 31 October to when the opinion is filed that Tuesday on 5 November. However, the Supreme Court's concern is about whether he can change his mind. And in your hypo, the field artillery officer, if brought back, that satisfies Jovino. And it also satisfies this court's concern in United States versus Witt about judges strategically manipulating a result.
Under your reading of that case, could an impeached judge, who's someone who's been impeached, fully impeached, could they, if they had sat on a panel or non-bunk panel, could that opinion still issue with and this is an Article III judge, with them on it because they're available, and that's what that case is concerned with. It doesn't matter their status as an Article III judge or no longer an Article III judge, right? They're still available. They can still change their vote or comment. So would that be okay?
Your Honor, regarding availability, there is an additional through line after United States versus Witt, and that is in regards to judicial impropriety. So in Witt, those judges acted improperly, and this court held they were ultimately disqualified and could not participate.
Well, I think what you're missing is the question is, does this person have the authority to issue the opinion, to participate in the ruling? And our concern is that these judges didn't have the authority. And what you're not telling, you're saying, well, they were available. They could have been given the authority if someone had thought to do it. But it doesn't seem to be any evidence in the record that anyone gave them any authority. So what authority were they exercising when they participated in the publication of the opinion?
Yes, Your Honor, and that is codified on page 35 of the joint appendix. So that's the footnote where it says Judge Walker and Judge Smalley completed final action, akin to Article III judges here where Judge Baker completed final action in Stellato before departing the court. And that would still satisfy the Supreme Court's concern.
But Judge Baker was a senior judge.
Correct. Yes, Your Honor. It's analogous, but not directly on par. And Article
We've got a senior judge right here, right? You know, you don't have any objection to him sitting in, on this case, right?
No, Your Honor. And in regards to senior
Thank
judge,
you.
Yes, Your Honor. And in regards to Senior Judge Efron's point about where in the panel composition do we have sort of an explicit rule where ultimately these tenures. And we don't have an explicit rule, and that is ultimately Rule 7, Charlie.
But didn't you already confirm, I thought when you first stood up, that when you retire, you lose your command authority, right? The authority that you wield, the authority that you have, that the Supreme Court said that being a CCA judge is germane to, you've been divested of that authority. So you don't have any authority to be germane to. So if you don't have any authority because you've retired, you've relinquished it, then what authority are they exercising when they participate?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I should have clarified because by retirement status under UCMJ, he still is subject to recall. So under Iovino, he still is available. So,
but doesn't that suggest then you'd have to be recalled? Like, we can't court-martial
correct.
Somebody. Like, members of the Land and Naval Forces who retire are still subject to the code. They're still members of the Land and Naval Forces. But if we want to court-martial them, we recall them to active duty and we court-martial them. Doesn't that sort of suggest that when you're in retirement status, that you're not the same as when you're in active duty? And if we want to treat you like you're in active duty, we have to actually recall you. And the availability to be recalled is different from actually being recalled?
Yes, Your Honor. And it is our position with the three-prong test that the availability satisfies the third prong. In regards to sort of the bureaucratic feat of being recalled, it would require SEC Army approval. But that's not the issue at bar here because Judge Smalley did not change his mind. In the footnote, he completed final action, and he was available if within the 5 days, 3 business days of filing, if he wanted to change his mind, he could, which is distinct from Iovino.
So, counsel, with regards to your three-prong test, is it the government's position you want us to apply this three-prong test in arriving at our decision? Is it in this case? Or is the government proposing this essentially as a potential amendment to Rule 7?
It is not prescriptive, Your Honor. Under Article 66 Hotel, the TJAG and all the TJAGs of our sister services ultimately have the joint rule of appellate procedure rulemaking ability. But it does serve as a guide about when judges are assigned to the CCA, when they're assigned to the case, when they complete final action, and when they're available to potentially change their mind. And appellant also brought up the idea of prejudice under the Liljeburg factors.
Before you get there, though, as you might guess, this is this issue with Judge Smalley's retirement is something I'm interested in. Some might say maybe I have some self-interest, but be that as it may, you said that he's available whether he gets recalled or not, but unlike annual leave or any other kind of leave, if you're retired, you can say, no, I don't want to come back, can't you?
Correct.
I mean, Judge, arguably, Judge Walker could not. If she was sent orders saying, hey, look, terminate your terminal leave and come on back, and we need some work for you to do, she would have had to comply, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
But a retired officer does not.
You do bring up a hypothetical of what would happen if a judge refused or if a judge then were no longer had the mental faculties. At that point, they would be deemed unavailable under Iovino.
But their natural state or default, from your point of view, is that they are still available, notwithstanding that they have retired and are only subject to recall.
Correct. Yes, Your Honor. At that point, the opinion is still mutable, whereas in Judge Reinhart, once he died 11 days prior to the issuance of the opinion, mm-hmm. then that opinion became final mm-hmm. and too prematurely. If we were to follow defense's bright-line rule that you must be assigned to the CCA and on the bench once the opinion was issued, that would create some practical implications for our system, for example, artificial vacancies. Judge Walker and Judge Smalley, knowing that they were retiring, would have to either rush their opinions or outright abandon them, or a level of strategic manipulation that this court has prohibited against in Witt. A judge knowing that their peer might be retiring and under defense's rule, then the en banc would be deemed improper, could essentially run out a judge's clock. This level of strategic manipulation is very akin to Witt, where the CCA judges ultimately elected to.
So let's move beyond the parade of imaginary horribles here and get to prejudice, because that's what you were about to talk to. Why wouldn't this be structural error rather than applying Liljeburg?
Your Honor, it's not structural error because the judges were assigned to the CCA and the case. They completed final action and they
were. All right, let's just assume we disagree
right.
with you about
That's
that.
That's the assumption.
Let's just assume that we think one or both of the judges should not have participated. Now we have an error. Why wouldn't that be a structural error? Why would we even bother with the Liljeburg? You're going to get on my pronunciation. Factors. Why? Like, we don't do this with panels, right? If you have a panel member who shouldn't have been there, it's a structural error. We don't count noses. Even with non-unanimous verdicts, we don't do that. Why would we do it here?
Your Honor, seeing that my time has expired.
Please respond.
Regarding the structural error, if this court finds that there is a level of error, then it's the government's request that this case get remanded back down for a proper en banc. However, under the three-prong test, we argue that there's no structural error. Your Honor, pending any questions, if I may briefly conclude.
Did you want to pursue that further? Senior Judge Efron, did you have?
No. Okay.
Do the rules prohibit an assignment of a commissioned officer to serve, to be assigned to the court, and for those assignments, let's say, to expressly say, and if you retire, your assignment will continue until it's terminated? Is there anything in the statute or the rule that would prohibit a retired military officer from continuing if that was unambiguous in the nature of the assignment?
No, Your Honor. In fact, Rule 7, Charlie, gives CCAs the discretion for regular active service, which could contemplate a retired judge.
And could that be a retired, when the judge retires, if that judge proposed, I don't want to be recalled to full-time active duty. I prefer to stay in my retired status for various reasons. And if the government was agreed to that, could a person continue to serve on the court if that's what the assignment provided for?
Under that hypothetical, if a judge declined to further participate, under Witt, we would say
no,
that...
No, I'm not suggesting that the judge was declining to further participate. The judge says, yes, I will participate. I will participate as a retired commissioned officer under Article 66, where it refers to commissioned officer. However, I do not want to be recalled to full-time active duty in my military status. I want to stay retired without an order to active duty. Would that be a lawful assignment to the court?
Yes, Your Honor. There is nothing in the statute or the MCM, and at that point it still satisfies Jovino's concern about availability and this Court's concern about judicial participation.
Is there anything in the record of this case that would indicate that that was undertaken, that is, that there was a contemplation of continued service and retired status?
No, Your Honor, there's nothing in the record where Judge Smalley wants to come back onto active service to change his mind.
And if I may, one further.
Please.
In the order of this Court, March 24th, the question about Chief Judge Smalley expressly stated, on what date did his assignment to the United States Court of Criminal Appeals end? Looking at the answer that was given to that and filed by the government, the only date that is specified with respect to answering that specific question was July 22nd, when he relinquished his command. Did his assignment end on the date that is addressed in that response filed by the government? Did he lose his assignment to the court on July 22nd for an opinion that was later issued on November 5th?
No, Your Honor. He retires on 31 October 2024, and at that point, in terms of divestiture of power, he is still available to come back for those 5 days after if he wanted to change his mind.
But is there... Where is the government's answer to the question posed by this Court? On what date did his assignment to the United States Army Court of Criminal Appeals end? I understand the arguments that are being made in terms of reference to law and policy, but in terms of the specific date, is there anything in the record of this case that shows the specific date in response to the question from the Court, the specific date on which the assignment to the United States Court of Criminal Appeals ended?
It would ultimately be the 31 October retirement, and then at that point he was still able to come back if he wanted to change his mind on the Abdullah opinion, Your Honor.
Is there anything in the filing of the government in response to this Court's question that says that?
Just the affidavit from Mr. Guzman, Your Honor, which lists his retirement date.
Thank you.
Penning.
Chief, I have one question.
Judge Johnson.
To return back to this, the hypothetical or the question with regards to senior judge status, for the circuit courts of appeals, it required Congress to enact a statute to authorize senior judge status, so 28 U.S.C. 4836, I forget the citation. CAF has a statutory provision that authorizes senior judge status. So what would be the basis for the intermediate courts to have senior judge status? Or is the government hanging its hat on the Article 66H authority for the TJAGs to create rules, and then the joint rules would be the authority?
Yes, Your Honor. But in regards to the question about 28 U.S.C. 46, Charlie, granted, those are Article III judges, but in Jovino, when they cite American Foreign SS Corporation, they do make a prejudice or public benefit argument where public confidence is best served where judges are fulfilling their judicial duties. And the same is true here. When the en banc was granted on 14 June, they were both assigned to the CCA, and they both began fulfilling their judicial duties. They didn't strategically manipulate or remove themselves like Witt. And Your Honor, if I may briefly conclude.
Any further questions from the bench? Yes, you may briefly conclude.
Your Honors, Judge Walker and Judge Smalley were assigned to the CCA when the en banc was granted. They remained available until issuance of the opinion on 5 November. They participated as Witt required, and we ask that you affirm ACCA's en banc. Thank you.
Thank you, Captain Moore. Captain Moore.
Judge Johnson, to your last question, Article III courts have 28 U.S.C. 46 Charlie. This court has Article 142 Echo. The government relies on a footnote to grant its authority in this case. The Army Court is not a command. It's an assignment. The government proposes a test, but we already have a test. Joint Rule 7 is the test for this court, for this panel composition. The government's test to fit this fact pattern is proof that the judges in this case were not assigned to the Army Court on November 5th, 2024. Cases must be decided by judges who are actually assigned to the court under American Foreign Steamship and Uvino. This is a structural error which undermines confidence in our military justice system. This court should vacate and remand to a lawfully composed panel.
Anything further?
I just not a question for you, but I wanted to state for the record that earlier, during my earlier ravings and rantings, I referred to Judge Walker as Captain Walker, I think. And I think
we knew
that
it was a sea service thing. You know, it's an OSIS.
I want the record to show that as a former Marine, I was mentally in my former life referring to her, of course, as an 06 in the Marine Corps, of which she has all the qualities, I might add.
Except for fire, Your Honor.
Very well. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Captain Moore. Thank you, Judge Sparks. Case is now submitted. The court thanks counsel for both sides, and the court will stand adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
All rise. The court stands adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning.